Next case is 07754, State of Ohio versus William Knuckles.
Chief Justice, may it please the Court. This case involves one of the most difficult modern drug problems, abuse of prescription drugs.
Counsel, where is this doctor now?
Where?
Yeah, is he locked up? Was he practicing medicine in Columbus?
No, the medical board has summarily taken away his certificate for the moment, pending this litigation and pending a hearing at the medical board.
What I'm wondering in reading this is, and this is all about who bears the burden, it sounds as if in this trial the prosecution laid out the whole case and assumed the burden. They put the evidence in terms of bringing in experts saying this is not in conformity with standard medical practice or from the pharmacy and all of that. So
that's correct.
In this particular case, the prosecution accepted the burden, went forward with the burden.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay,
so
why didn't the prosecution straighten the judge out on the charge? Because it sounds as if with a proper charge, you still would have had a conviction, because I'm saying if the charge that got this case overruled had been correct with respect to the burdens, you still would have had a conviction. It is highly probable based on the evidence that the state presented.
Well, I'm not sure that's true for a couple of reasons, Your Honor. First of all...
Well, let me follow up where I'm going, then you can respond to the whole 9 yards of what's troubling. It would seem with the proposed shift of burden that any medical practitioner, any dentist, I don't know whether veterinarians handle drugs, but anybody who can dispense these drugs or write a prescription for it could be prosecuted. And then they would have to come forward with an affirmative defense, because they're dispensing drugs that would be, if anybody else did it, would be a violation of the law.
Absolutely correct, Your Honor. That's what we're saying. That's the way the law is written.
Well, isn't that a horrible thing for practitioners? I mean, not every doctor in this state keeps perfect medical records. There are a lot of good doctors who are probably pretty sloppy with their records and could be awfully vulnerable if you flip the burden.
Your Honor, the whole reason that the medical board and the pharmacy board set out those regulations that are in the appendix to our brief, that's the reason our brief is so thick, is the whole reason for that was to give doctors, and there are parallel regulations for everybody else, veterinarians, nurse practitioners, pharmacists, whatever. The whole reason for those regulations by the pharmacy and the medical board is to give a doctor a list of do's and don'ts for dealing with these dangerous drugs. That is the whole point of those regulations. Doctors are required to understand and know those regulations and follow those regulations just to keep their certificate to practice medicine, let alone a criminal charge. Secondly, if you make that basically what the prosecutor did here, if you make it necessary for the prosecution to prove every time you have a drug trafficking case to prove this affirmative defense, this subsection B, every single time you have the crack dealer on the street corner, you're trying to prosecute him, you're going to have to prove he's not a doctor, he's not a veterinarian, he's not a pharmacist.
I don't think that's going to be that difficult, is it?
It might be a crack dealer on the street
proven he's not a doctor.
They're not even the only exception. They're also undercover police officers. Every time you bring somebody in, you're going to have to prove he's not an undercover police officer. He's not one of these people whose conduct is regulated by the statutes that are listed. It's much easier.
Where is it clear in the criminal statute that this is an affirmative defense?
It's clear because it meets very clearly the definition, the statutory definition, and the definition under this court's case, Doran, for an affirmative defense. That is, it's an excuse or justification. Yes, I did sell this controlled substance, or I did prescribe this controlled substance. I admit it. However, my excuse is...
Well, every doctor does that every day. That's a part of their practice.
Absolutely it is. It absolutely is, Your Honor. But the way the law is written, it's an affirmative defense. And the burden is on the person bringing in the affirmative defense. It's an everyday occurrence for a police officer.
Why would the legislature write a law? I mean, we have to look at the legislative intent and how they would... Why would they write a law that presumes everybody that is a doctor that is dispensing is trafficking in drugs? Why wouldn't that be the point that you start from, and then the burden is to prove that they somehow violated the standards that they are regulated to? I can't accept that it's hard to accept that a legislature would assume that every licensed professional is assumed to be trafficking in drugs. Only if they can prove that they were subject to some exception can they get out of that.
I think that's the whole point of the affirmative defense, Your Honor, is that, I mean, first of all, it would be not only foolish and a waste of resources, but it would be unethical for a prosecutor who knew a doctor was legitimate and had a legitimate affirmative defense to try and prosecute them.
So then why do we
make... I think from a practical standpoint, it doesn't make that much difference from a prosecution standpoint.
Why is it such a burden on a prosecutor to be able to establish that this was a doctor? That should be pretty easy to establish. You could even stipulate to that. And then you deal with whether they actually committed a felony by dispensing drugs out of the prescribed regulations that they're allowed to do with it. I mean, why is if we shift this burden to the prosecutor, why is that so difficult for your position?
Because
why is that so difficult?
It's not that it's difficult necessarily, Your Honor, but a couple of things. First of all, as I said, it fits the statutory definition of an affirmative defense in that it is peculiarly within the knowledge of the accused. The doctor is the one who keeps his own records. He understands what his notations mean. He has seen these patients. There might be unrecorded observations that he's made of these patients. He is far more able to come in and say, look, here's how I obeyed the law. Here's how I went through the medical board and the pharmacy board regulations A, B, and C, and I obeyed them, rather than a prosecutor having to come in, bring in an expert, and try to infer how this doctor may or may not have...
That's part of your normal burden of proof in proving a felony. You have to do that in every case. You have to prove that they were out of the norm in violating the law.
Yes.
Instead of assuming that they were out of the norm to begin with.
That's the way the law is written, Your Honor. That's the way the statute is written. In fact, it's almost perfectly analogous to the concealed carry law, where you have the law saying no person shall knowingly carry whatever, concealed weapon, and then you have the affirmative defense. This section does not apply to, and then police officers and Alyssa, a bunch of people who have to not only show that they're police officers, but they have to show that they were within the course of their duty when they were carrying a concealed weapon. This statute is exactly analogous. It states no person shall knowingly sell drugs. And then B, this section does not apply to any of the following. By the way, this is not the only affirmative defense. The prosecution technically would have to go through all the affirmative defenses and prove that every crack dealer on the corner is not one of these many, many possible affirmative defenses before they can just simply prove he was selling a controlled substance.
But how many cases do you know of? How many prosecutors have you talked to that were prosecuting crack dealers that they brought in somebody or even asked the question, are you a doctor or are you a nurse?
That's the point. That's the point, Your Honor. They would have to, technically, if you make this affirmative defense part of the crime of trafficking in drugs.
You say make it. What case now stands for the proposition that it is an affirmative defense? What case law is out there that says right now it is an affirmative defense?
That's why we're here, Your Honor. There is no Supreme Court case law saying that this is an affirmative defense.
What Court of Appeals case says it's an affirmative defense?
We don't. I can't tell you one right now. What I can tell you is the Court of Appeals.
So there is no case out there that would indicate, if we agree with the Court of Appeals, that we're changing the law.
I think, Your Honor, what you'd be doing is not only changing this particular statute, but by implication, you would be changing a lot of other criminal statutes that are set up exactly the same way. As I said, concealed carry weapons. Rather than having it be an affirmative defense, wait a minute, I'm a security guard, I'm allowed to carry a concealed weapon, the prosecutor would have to bring in evidence that you're not a member of the Secret Service, you're not the FBI, you're not the local police, you're not
We could write an opinion that is narrowly defined to this statute and make it clear that it applies to someone who's in the regular profession of being a medical licensed.
But, Your Honor, you'd be going against the will of the General Assembly that clearly wanted this to be an affirmative defense.
If we accept your interpretation, and that's not quite clear because that's why we're here.
This case would have implications, as you said, for other statutes that are written. This is a typical statute written.
Very typical.
And here's the crime, and here's the exception. The exception is an affirmative defense. So
that's correct.
This case, if we were to affirm, we would have to, I guess, somehow say it doesn't apply to any other statute that looks like this statute,
right,
which is a little difficult to do.
You would have to say, even though this meets the definition of an affirmative defense under 2901.05c, it looks exactly like an affirmative defense, that we're saying that it's not. And we're saying that all the other statutes that are written this way still are, but for whatever reason, this one is not. The legislature wrote it as an affirmative defense.
It seems to me that the definition of affirmative defense here, an excuse or justification peculiarly within the knowledge of the accused is really applies to a doctor, because the prosecutor is not going to know the doctor's patients or to whom the doctor prescribes drugs. That really is in the knowledge of the
That's absolutely correct.
With the doctor, and shouldn't be the knowledge of anyone else, actually.
That's correct. The records, the doctor's records, should be private under most circumstances. And that's correct. These records are within the knowledge and the possession of the doctor, and the patients are known to the doctor and not to the prosecutor.
Counsel, there are documents that the doctor needs to, as you said before, instructions on how they have to keep their records. And doctor's burden, it would seem to me, would be to be forthcoming and say, here are my records. They're according to the regulations that govern all doctors that are prescribing OxyContin or some other controlled substance. And as you said, those are contained within the doctor's operation of his office and, I would imagine, contained in the health records of his patients. But I think one of the ways that I'm looking at this, and I as an affirmative defense, is that these are controlled substances that are identified by the legislature as substances that are only to be handled by licensed professionals. So you start with the premise that nobody should have these except for, and then you go through the litany.
That's absolutely correct.
And so I think it's important to focus part of this analysis on what's the subject. What's the item? What's the, like you said, the gun, you know, in a concealed carry case, which is a little different because of the constitutional right, I think, the Second
Correct.
Amendment.
It's amended now, yes.
But this particular, there is no right to have OxyContin or any of these other, but for the specific purpose that is enumerated in the statute.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And, in fact, we want doctors to be very well aware when they are prescribing these drugs. Yes, it's a part of their practice, but we want them to be very aware every time they prescribe drugs like this that they are prescribing a dangerous controlled substance.
Counsel,
and they're not handing out aspirin.
Counsel, do you know what the process is when the state medical board takes a look at this? Is there still an affirmative defense upon the physician to show that they complied, or does the state medical board have to show they didn't comply?
The state medical board has to show that that the doctor did not apply or did not follow the rules. However, there are two things the state medical board has that a prosecutor doesn't have. First of all, the state medical board has a much lower standard of proof. Rather than beyond reasonable doubt, they only have to show by preponderance. And secondly, the state medical board has medical expertise. They can look at medical records and their own rules and have a much better understanding of whether or not a doctor is complying. Unlike a prosecutor who's used to going after, you know, the crack dealer on the corner, he has to bring in an expert to explain to him whether or not this doctor is really following the rules or not.
Ms. Porter?
Yes.
Are there other statutory schemes other than carrying concealed weapon which are, in your view, analogous to this situation for affirmative defenses?
I'm sure there are, Your Honor. I did not do an exhaustive look at the criminal code, but the concealed carry was an obvious one because of the Ohio jury instructions actually uses that as the analog for this, and that's what was used in the court below when they tried to decide how to do the jury instructions here.
Thank you.
Counsel, so I don't overstate or misunderstand what you're saying. Every time a doctor, a nurse practitioner, anybody who can dispense medicine, any time they dispense medicine, write a prescription, or hand it to a patient,
Correct. They
violate the drug laws.
If it's a controlled substance, and if they are not doing it within the do's and don'ts that the medical requires. Okay,
but the start is every time...
Correct.
You violated the drug laws, and if a prosecutor brings you in, then it's your affirmative defense. I mean, because you're going to say, yeah, I did it. Unlike the kid on this corner, he's going, oh, that was sugar in my pocket. The doc is going to say,
absolutely
I did that.
That's correct.
And at that point, the prosecution has made its case, and now the burden is on the doctor to show that this was in conformity. And if he's already the defendant, he's going to have to bring in expert witnesses.
That's correct.
To confirm that his judgment
is correct.
Is correct.
That's
because
correct.
It isn't going to carry the day just to say, you know, it probably isn't going to say I did it and here's my records. He's going to have to get the expert, or he or she. Is going to have to get the expert to say this is exactly the way you do it.
That's technically correct, Your Honor. Yes, the prosecutor.
Okay, so that's the way you would see a case unfolding.
That's the way a case should unfold. Yes. Now, again, as I said earlier, though, a prosecutor would be unethical to bring that kind of a case against a doctor unless he was pretty sure that the doctor was not going to be able to meet the affirmative defense. Not only would it be unethical, but it would be a huge waste of resources to bring it in against every doc just because they happen to write a prescription for a cough.
Well, in fact, this is the first case we've seen like this. It may indicate that this is not a practice that's being abused, or that prosecutors aren't abusing this. And I don't know about the medical board, but it seems we would have seen a case before this if there had been widespread or even not widespread abuse.
I would certainly hope that you would have seen it before now if there were prosecutorial abuse in this area, Your Honor.
Well, Counsel, the trigger here, I mean, there were three undercover transactions
Right.
with the OxyContin, but in normal course of events, there are mechanisms in place for the monitoring of pharmaceutical dispensing stores, you know, whether it's whatever the pharmacy is.
Whatever, yeah.
And that is often what triggers the closer examination of a physician when you look at the controlled substance, which, again, by statute is identified, and the prosecutor's burden is to identify the substance, and then subsequently looking at the way the doctor treats that substance in his or her dispensing of it. And that's what the whole case is about. And he's... or she is just justifying their actions.
That's correct. And this case, from what I understand, is fairly typical. It was a collaborative effort between the medical board, the pharmacy board, and the prosecutor. It was brought about by numerous complaints about this doctor from many different people. that there seem to be problems with his dispensing and prescription of these drugs. So this is not just randomly picking a doctor somewhere. This was a long-time investigation triggered by numerous complaints.
Counsel, I believe I read in the materials somewhere that the Ohio State Medical Association was an amicus in the appellate case on behalf of the physician or the point of physician, yet they've not filed an amicus brief in this case. And is there any significance in that?
I would have to go back and check the rules, Your Honor, but as you know, the other side in this case failed to file a brief on the merits, and I'm not sure whether an amicus would be allowed to file if the party did not file a brief. So I'm not sure whether there's any significance to that or not.
You've used your time, Ms. Porter.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The appellee has not filed a timely brief pursuant to our Rule 9.3b, and so has waived oral argument. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.